Hello, and welcome back to the Talk Mats podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Nibley, and we are sponsored by Old DC Apparel. Head on over to shopolddc.com for the latest and greatest in DC fan gear. Use the code TalkNatsPod at checkout for 10% off your order. You can subscribe to the show, the video versions on YouTube at TalkNats Podcast. That's also our handle on X. And the audio only version is available on pretty much any major platform. So yeah, we were going through a failed rebuild series with my good friend Brian King. And I do have part three of that we will play at some point. But unfortunately today I'm going to bump him. Lindsay Buckingham style, like, what's up with that? We're going to bump him today because we lucked into some special guests. You may remember them as Clip and Save, the back end of the early 2010s Nats bullpen when the team made the transition from a last place team to a true contender. I'm talking about Tyler Clippard and Drew Storen. We went on for a while, so I'm going to break this into two parts. This first part, we'll get into their whiskey business they've started together, which is super cool. They get corn from the Field of Dreams in Iowa. It's a wild idea for anyone who loves whiskey. And we're going to start talking about you know, their time as young players on the Nats when they made the transition from a loser to a winner. And one little disclaimer for the video version. I foolishly left the blinds in my office open. So there's a point of this podcast where the sun's really hitting me in the face and I look like Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars. So I'm still getting used to this, having a video feed the show. Sun monster on the podcast. But anyway, here are Drew Storen and Tyler Clippard. So right now, we have some special guests, two of the best relievers to ever come through Washington, D.C. We're joined by Drew Storen and Tyler Clippard. Guys, thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Now, in terms of life after baseball, I understand you guys have gotten into the whiskey business together. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so throughout my career, I kind of collected too much bourbon also roped in guys like Clip and Tanner Roark and Barrett and some of those guys to join the crew. And just along the way in 2018, had the idea to take the corn from the Field of Dreams movie site and make bourbon out of it. And so hung them up there in at the end of 2020 and decided to see if this would be able to pull this off. So gave Clip a call and lo and behold, we're here. I figured somebody would tell us no along the way. So it's been a hell of a ride, man. So we've got three different bottles out right now. So learned a lot about a new business, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, were you like fans of the movie? It's cool that you're getting the corn actually from the actual field. I mean, what gave you that idea? How did you kind of get on to that concept as something to do after your playing days?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just kind of reverse engineered what I was buying from my collection. And, you know, that's a cool story. Right. And so using that and like understanding like there are certain hooks that every whiskey has on that story. And so what would be the authentic hook? And it was just my buddy and I on a road trip, just kind of spitballing different ideas. And that's when it came up of like, well, what if we did this? And it seemed, you know, I didn't know anything about corn at the time. So that was the first thing I had to do was learn about corn. And luckily I come from a corn town. And so I called the biggest farmer from my hometown. He taught me about corn and how to speak in bushels and, the rest is history.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you guys don't know anything about me. I work in television. I actually worked on the show Moonshiners for a few years there. I mean, there's a lot to learn about whiskey. I mean, what has the learning curve been like? I mean, it's there's a lot to it, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it too, we contract to distill everything out, so we let the pros do that. You don't need Cliff you don't need I don't have time to figure that out. And like,
sure,
I said, there's
sure.
For me, I was a product design major in college, so this is my, like, I stay in my lane very much about it.
Sure.
And we do our taste tests. You know, I know I certainly know how to taste it and know what I'm aiming for to match the story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I haven't learned too much when it comes to actual science. Now, when it comes to selling it, that's what the science I've kind of gotten into.
Cool. Now I wanted to go back to your time with the Nats. You guys were both here at the beginning of a rebuild, kind of like what the team is going through now. You know, and you were there starting in a rebuild, and then, you know, when the team grew to become a championship, you know, contender. We were curious your thoughts. What was that process like? But more, when did you guys know you had turned a corner, you know, from that, the 29, 2010, 2011 Nats into what you guys ended up becoming? When did you guys finally feel like, all right, I'm part of a team that's going to do something?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take this one just because I was okay. I was there a little bit before Drew was, and I kind of got the full scope of kind of the arc of the very, very bad Nats teams. When I first joined the organization, that's kind of what it was. It was, you know, I came over from a New York Yankees organization that was, you know, a perennial winner and really good organization, and came to the Nats, and it was a very eye-opening experience, kind of those two dichotomies of organizations and my first new organization coming from the New York. And I was just like, man, what is this place? You know, like they were losing 100 games a year, and the facilities weren't the best, and the food wasn't the best, and, you know, personnel wasn't the best, and, you know, that kind of thing. And I felt like I was excited to be there because it was a great opportunity. I was, you know, 22 years old, ready and hungry. Had just, you know, dipped my toe in the big league arena with New York in 07. So I come in 08 and, you know, was probably a little naive and cocky, thinking I was going to make the team and didn't. But spent 08 in AAA, but to see kind of the turnaround that we had. And, you know, a big part of that was bringing in guys like Drew. And, you know, because we were bad for a few years in a row, we got some first round picks out of that.
Yeah.
And Drew was one of those guys. Strauss was one of those guys. Harper eventually was one of those guys. So being able to draft that kind of talent in those kind of years, not every organization falls, you know, into those number one picks and gets those kind of talents, you know? So yeah, we were really, really lucky from that standpoint. And then another big sign that we had, I remember in 2011, we brought in Jason Wirth, and kind of a similar kind of thing where he came from an organization from the Philadelphia Phillies that was perennial winners and kind of knew the structure of what a winning organization looked like, but he was a veteran guy. Yeah. I couldn't come in there and say, hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z. Because I didn't know, you know, I just knew that the Yankees did it the right way and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't really know. Jason knew, and he came in and was really adamant about us kind of changing some things culturally, changing, you know, some dietary stuff, the equipment that we had at our disposal, you know, from top to bottom. He really had some input as to what we needed to change. And he was really a big piece of that. And kind of, you know, being a part and seeing all that. When I was with the Nats in those 7 years was really, really fun, really, really special to be a part of that kind of rebuild process, going through some of those hardships of losing all those games early on, sticking around and pitching well enough to be a part of those teams that was eventually, you know, we were a championship caliber team by the time I left, and you know, a couple playoff appearances and things like that. So it was really, really fun to do that. And, you know, the best friends that I still have in my life are from those teams. You know, and I always tell people, you know, me and Drew were the best of friends, lived together for many years in Washington, and now we're like an old married couple. So it's like, it was really, really special time and probably both of our lives, but mine as well.
Cool. Yeah, no, you actually, it was going to be my next question, but you kind of went there. I was going to ask, you know, how important was it to get a veteran leader? We've been talking about on our show that the current Nats probably need that Jason Wirth, someone like that to come over. But, you know, you kind of went there. But I guess what I'd ask then is, did you guys have anyone on the pitching side? I know you were younger pitchers around that turn. Was there someone that took you under their wing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had Matt Capps initially. You know, that he was great. And then, you know, you had Jace Marquis. You know, I had a bunch. And then you had Levo. I mean, you can't, mm-hmm. can't ask for a better guy to talk pitching or just anything in general within Levo. But yeah, we had some guys at our disposal. And that was the nice thing too. Like, yeah, maybe from the on-field talent side, it might not have been the best of the best, but they all had experience. And for somebody like me that, you know, had just shown up 5 minutes before, you know, I had to learn as much as I could and learn from those guys.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I want to add in, because like I like to give credit to the older veteran guys, because I eventually became one, and so it's really meaningful when you get those guys to help you out. And you know, I would love to sit here and say that it was, you know, the Marianos and the Andy Pettits and Mike Messina's, the guys that I played with in New York, but I was only there for such a short time. I definitely took little bits and pieces from those guys when I was there, but I wasn't there long enough to truly benefit from them. And I remember coming over to Washington, and there was a guy who I'd played with in New York, and he eventually came over to Washington as well. He was a reliever, kind of a jack of all trades guy, took the ball every single day. Ron Valone, he was a lefty reliever. He was a big influence in me learning how to become a reliever, because I transitioned, you know, with the Nats from a starter to a reliever. And he was the guy who really laid the groundwork on, you know, what it took day to day to you know, how to keep your body right, you know, mentality, what to expect, just all that kind of stuff, all encompassing. He was a really good guy for me to be around early in my career to teach me kind of the ropes. And then, yeah, to Drew's point, Matt Capps was big for me and Drew both, because at that time we were thinking, both of in our minds, we're thinking about being back into the bullpen kind of guys. And so we looked to him because he had success in those roles to kind of see what that was all about too. So, you know, those two guys for me were huge.
I was curious, what was it like playing for Davey Johnson? Did it make a difference to you as young players at the time, having a manager who had, you know, was kind of iconic, the 86 Mets, who had been to the World Series? Was that something you benefited from?
I loved it. Davey just shot you really straight.
Yeah. You can swear on this podcast too if you need to.
He didn't really beat around the bush, but you know, and that's what I loved. I mean, that's a guy that had a million years of experience, and you know, just kind of call it like it is, and there wasn't any doubt, you know, what he thought about something. So I always appreciated that. I'm sure Cliff would say something similar. And also, like, I loved the way he ran a bullpen. I thought he was, you know, I always tell people, like, he was the master at knowing how to lose, which is the art of running a bullpen. And, you know, it helps when you have a Swiss Army knife like a Craig Stammen down there that could just pitch at any point and do whatever you ask. But, you know, the ability that he had to kind of stay away from Cliff and I on some of those 1-2 run deficit games really kind of helped us out.
Yeah, that was a big deal for any reliever that you talk to Drew's point, what he's talking about, like knowing how to lose. I mean, not every manager is willing to do that and to stick to their guns and to have really a game plan, tell you the game plan, but then follow through with the game plan, because, you know, there's, you know, every win matters in the big leagues. The margins are razor thin. And for Davey to be the guy that was like, listen, you know, we're going to keep you guys as fresh as we can, on a daily basis. And he stuck to it, man. And I respect the hell out of him for doing that. And to Drew's point though, it was just like, what he said was going to happen, and it helped the other guys too, because there was days where we would be in these, you know, close games, but winning, you know, say up 2, up 3, up 1.
Yeah.
And it was like, Clip, you are not pitching today. And it was like one of those things was like, are you sure? Like, I mean, I'll do it if I need to. And he's like, no, man, you're not. And I'm like, all right. And then conversely, it would give a guy like, you know, maybe Sean Burnett's a good example, where he stepped into some of those late inning roles when he needed and did the job, because mentally he was prepared to do the job when that, you know, seventh, eighth, that time came up in that specific game. He was like, all right, I'm the guy today. And he did it, and not all managers are willing to do that, and it usually worked too. So I give Davey all the credit in the world. He was, I always tell people, the best manager I ever had.
Okay, so that was our episode. Really cool stuff about Jason Wirth. I didn't even have to ask the question. Clipper just went into that. Just talked all about him. And interesting stuff about Davey. Both of them couldn't say enough great things about the roles he defined and his consistency in enforcing them. Anyway, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back with part two of this interview with Drew Storen and Tyler Clippard next Friday. I think we're going to put the podcast out every Friday moving forward. So, it might go up Thursday night at midnight. It might go up Friday afternoon at noon. But, we'll try to get it up the first half of the day on Friday and start promoting it then. So, look for it every Friday. It'll be a little bit of a TGIF treat. With all that being said, that's our episode for this week. Hopefully, we'll get some news, some free agent signings, some things like that. But in the meantime, go Nats.